So we are in a year-long theme on relationships. God is passionate about his relationship with you and me. I'm going to say that probably every Sunday for this whole year. He's passionate. He's not passive. He's not avoiding you. He's passionate about you. He's passionate about every area of our lives, our relationship with money, our relationship with the church, the mission, and with the resurrection. We're concluding the sermon series, Relationship with Hurry. What is this distraction and addiction and this pace of life really doing to our souls? In part one, we looked at the enemy of our soul, right? Hurry keeps us from God by stealing our attention. How many know that to be true, right? Hurry kills relationships. It kills joy and gratitude and appreciation and wisdom. Jesus is trying to grow love and joy and peace in the soil of your heart and my heart. So we must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from our lives. Part two, we looked at the way of Jesus. The way of Jesus, the solution to an overbusy life or soul is not more time. What if these limitations that we have as humans were a gift from God to our souls? Jesus offers all the weary and the burdened an invitation to come to him, to take up his easy yoke, and he will give you rest for your soul. Be with Jesus as an apprentice, under him and his example. If you have questions about how to live or what decisions to make, ask Jesus, he'll tell you. Become like Jesus, who was present with everyone he was with. He loved his Father and he loved people. Do what Jesus would do if he were you, if he were me. Do what Jesus would do. How would you respond? How would you do an action the way Jesus would do it? Part three, we talked about the way of Jesus, silence and solitude. Jesus, God, the Son of God, needed to spend time to pray alone with the Father. Without silence and solitude, we can feel distant from God. We can feel distant from ourselves. We become anxious and we become exhausted, which turns it into escapes to try to avoid those feelings. And we're easy prey for the tempter to push our souls even further away from God until we have this emotional unhealth as we enter, you know, and not who God made us to be. But when we take time for our soul, as we enter the quiet place alone with Jesus in an unhurried time to decompress, to slow down, we start feeling again. We begin to face what's in our hearts, that tough challenge of facing what's in our hearts. And in that moment of quiet, we can hear his voice above all the other voices. Part four, we talked about the way of Jesus, simplicity and slowing. When a person's actions and behaviors and life choices contradict their values and their beliefs, it's called cognitive dissonance, right? The most important thing in life aren't things at all, but relationships with family, friends, and above all, with God. And I ask this question, what if Jesus is right and more stuff equals less of what matters most in our lives? Less time, less freedom, less generosity, less peace, less margin, less relationships, less prayer, less of God. Simplicity is an inward reality that can be seen in an outward lifestyle of choosing to leverage time and money and talents and possessions toward what matters most. It's simplifying our lives. Slowing is cultivating patience by deliberately choosing to place ourselves in positions where we simply have to wait. God's word says to be still and know that I am God. Micah says, what does the Lord require? Act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. So how did these practices of simplicity and slowing go this week? I know for me it's been challenging to drive the speed limit. But you know what? I've been doing it, and it's not a legalistic thing. I'm making you do that. I'm saying for me, it's forcing me to slow down and just be aware of my own soul. I always had this sense of waiting restlessly to be older, wanting to be older than I was, but time would move so slowly as a kid. Couldn't wait to be old enough to ride a bike instead of a big wheel like the other kids, right? Old enough to be in youth group or to go to junior high. Then when I got there, I wanted to be old enough to drive and leave my bike behind, get my driver's license, be old enough to get a job and to have my own money to spend. And as I get older, time doesn't move as slowly at all anymore. Time really does fly the older I get. There's a different kind of restlessness that comes with different dreams and passions and desires. When I was a kid, I dreamed about all things electric trains. When I was a teenager, I was passionate about playing and watching basketball, watching my favorite team. When I was a young adult in college, I met and fell in love with the girl I married. And now that I'm married for almost 34 years and have a new son-in-law, there is a desire, you know what I'm going to say, for a grandchild, right? For grandchildren someday. Seasons. I mean, we're in a different season. Empty nesters for a little while, and we got our daughter off the payroll, and she's, right? She was independent. But there's that desire for grandchildren. Like a carrot on a stick, right? Desires always seem just out of reach. I know that I'm not alone when it comes to these feelings and dreams and passions and desires that are just out of reach, making us restless. Junior high, high school, college graduates, and not knowing the future, not knowing the next step, it just seems, it's just, I can almost touch it. But as we all know, desire is a great motivator, but left unchecked, it can drive our lives and lead us into trouble. How many could say, yes, that's true? I mean, okay, am I the only heathen up here? If you think about it, desire is never satisfied. Desire is never satisfied. Desire is infinite. It has no limits. And since we are finite and since we have limits, it causes this restlessness in our spirit, in our soul. Thomas Aquinas once asked this question, what would satisfy our desire? What would satisfy our desire? What would it take to feel satisfied? And the answer, he said, was everything. Everything. Every experience, every emotion, every country, every city, every type of food, every occupation, every award, everything. We'd have to experience it all to be satisfied. But we're still limited in time and space and mostly money, right? We can't do that. We just cannot do that. It's been said that desire is infinite partly because we were made in the image of God. We were made for God. We were made to need God and made to run on God. We can be satisfied only by the one who is infinite, who is eternal, and able to supply all our needs. We are only at home in God. And when we fall away from God, the desire of the infinite, it still remains inside. But it is now replaced with things that will certainly lead to destruction and those desires in our heart. Nothing in this life apart from God will satisfy our souls. I know that it's not what we want to hear on a Sunday morning, but nothing in this life apart from God will satisfy our souls. And it's like a merry-go-round. We feel this restlessness, this anger, this angst, this anxiety, and this depression, and this disillusionment, which leads to hurry, which leads to busyness, and there's overload, and there's burnout, which leads us further to this restlessness, and around we go in this life. I just want to get off the ride. I just want to get off. I'm feeling this restlessness. So what do we do with this restlessness? How else can we practice the way of Jesus? As we conclude today, my sermon title in our relationship with hurry is The Way of Jesus, Sabbath. Sabbath. Silence, solitude, simplicity, slowing, Sabbath. See, these are the ways of Jesus to connect with God and to connect with our own souls. The word Sabbath comes from the Hebrew word Shabbat. And it literally means to stop. I know what you know what a stop sign looks like, but since we have one, I'm going to show you. This is what Sabbath means. The Sabbath is a day to stop, stop working, stop wanting, stop worrying, stop hurrying, just stop. You see, it's intentional. It's intentionally taking a day of the week to slow down. You didn't know that was back there, did you? It's planning. It's intentionally slowing down to stop. You see, Sabbath is about restfulness, not restlessness. And it all starts back at the beginning in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Skip to the next chapter, chapter 2, verses 2 and 3. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, God rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. God made everything that we see with our eyes, everything that we can't see with our eyes, and everything yet to be discovered. And after the sixth day of working, God rested. I'm an extrovert. I like to stay busy. God rested. Good idea, but I have a demanding job that I absolutely love. God rested. I have little kids at home. I really can't do that now. God rested. By God resting, he built a rhythm into the very DNA of his creation. God worked for 6 days and rested for one. Six and one. Six and one. Now, I know there might be some pushback from this God idea of Sabbath. Some have said, well, you know, some have said in the past, whatever, the devil doesn't take a day off, so why should I? And the last time I checked, we're not trying to be like the devil. Right? I want to be like Jesus, take God's example, and practice Sabbath. By practicing the way of Jesus, practicing Sabbath, God designed our souls to flourish and to thrive. When God rested, what does that word rested really mean? I mean, did God actually get tired? Did God get burnt out? Did God just take a nap from all of his exhaustion? You see, Sabbath means to stop, but it can also be translated to delight, to delight. It's stopping and enjoying God with our lives, our souls. An entire day set aside to follow God's example, to stop and to delight. To delight in the world that he made. To delight being in this beautiful world. To delight in God himself. God stopped. God rested. God set an entire day to delight in his own work. Think about that for a moment. 6 days of creation. And God says, I'm going to sit back and look at that. He rested. You see, the practice of Sabbath was also woven into Jesus' weekly routine. Jesus, if you read the New Testament, he got in trouble a lot from the religious leaders on a certain day of the week, and it was the Sabbath. One such story is found in Mark chapter 2, starting with verse 23 through 28. It says this: "One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and his disciples walked along, and they began to pick some of the heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, 'Look, why are you doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?' He answered, 'Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is unlawful only for priests to eat, and he also gave some to his companions. Then he said to them, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath." On a lazy, hot Sabbath afternoon, Jesus and his disciples were walking through a grain field like we would do here in Illinois, in the cornfields, right? And they began to pick the grain. According to Jewish law, it was legal to harvest by hand. You could do that, but not lawful on the Sabbath. No work was to be done of any kind on the Sabbath, and picking heads of grain was considered work. But Jesus reminds them of the story of their own King David, who ate some special bread that only the priests were allowed to eat. You see, the first century Jews believed that man was made for the Sabbath. Strict rules of what you could and couldn't do on that day. They had it all backwards and were very legalistic about it. They totally missed God's heart behind the command to slow down, to stop one day a week. God made the Sabbath law for man's benefit, not to add a burden to them. The reality is that Sabbath was made for people. It was designed yet again as another gift of God Himself for us to enjoy. God is a good gift giver. So what does practicing the Sabbath mean? What does that mean? Maybe you've been around a while and you've heard the word Sabbath, or maybe you're new and you don't quite understand. What does it mean? Sabbath is more than just a day. It's a way of being in the world. It's so much more than coming to church once a week to worship, which is great, right? It's a spirit of rest that comes from abiding with God the Father. On one side, we have restfulness. On the other side, we have restlessness, right? Restfulness versus restlessness. We have margin versus busyness, slowness versus hurry, quiet versus noise, deep relationships versus isolation, delight versus distraction, enjoyment versus envy, clarity versus confusion, gratitude versus greed, contentment versus discontentment, trust versus worry, love versus anger, joy versus sadness, peace versus anxiety. Sabbath is about abiding with God. I read that the Sabbath has largely been forgotten by the church, which has uncritically mimicked the rhythms of the industrial and the success-oriented West. And the result, right? Our exhausted churches have largely failed to integrate Sabbath into their lives as vital elements of Christian discipleship. It's not as though we do not love God. We love God deeply. We just don't know how to sit with God anymore. We love God deeply. We're committed. We just don't know how to sit with God anymore. We have become perhaps the most emotionally exhausted, overworked, spiritually malnourished people in history. In our culture today, we've swung the pendulum clear to the other side and hardly don't remember or observe a Sabbath at all. As we read earlier, Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath. It was one of Jesus' core values. But if you are to live the way of Jesus as an apprentice, Sabbath was built into Jesus' rhythm of life. An entire day, every week, set aside just to slow down, to stop, and to rest. It was a part of what it was his way. Peace Chapel, our goal and aim coming together is to do what Jesus did and to live the way Jesus lived and to walk the way Jesus walked and to talk like he talked. My first thought this morning is this: Sabbath as blessed and holy. Back to the Genesis story, three things are blessed by God. In the first couple of chapters, God blessed the animal kingdom by saying, "Be fruitful and increase in number." Then God blessed humanity the same way, "Be fruitful and multiply." But notice what else God did. He blessed the seventh day and he made it holy. God blessed animals, humans, and a day. I don't know about you, but I want to be a part of God's blessing. What does that mean? What does that mean that God blessed animals, humans, and a day? At the end of a busy, tiring week, you can be exhausted, you can be depleted and worn down. The Sabbath is how you fill your soul back up with life. The Sabbath is how you fill your soul back up with life. There was a study done by a doctor who cited the happiest people on earth. And near the top of that list was a group called Seventh-day Adventists, who are literal about the Sabbath. The doctor noted that they live 10 years longer than the average American. If you Sabbath every 7 days, it adds up to 10 years over a lifetime, almost exactly. Some of us may want to Sabbath 3 days a week. So the Sabbath is blessed, and the Sabbath is also holy. It's set apart from the rest of the days of the week. You see, in ancient times, the gods were found in a holy temple or on a holy mountain or at a holy shrine. But the one true and holy God is not found in a place, but in a day. If you want to go and meet with God, you don't have to go to some holy mountain or some holy shrine. You can just set aside a day of the week to Sabbath, to slow down, to stop it long enough to rest, to experience him, to this blessing and this holiness. God's heart is that you stop and delight in him. Second thought was this: Sabbath as remembering. Sabbath as remembering. The setting is this: Israel had just left captivity in Egypt, where they had just left and they're camped around Mount Sinai. And God wanted them to become a holy people, to be set apart from the other nations around them. But for 400 years, when they lived in Egypt, they were in slavery. And Egypt's ways had crept into their own lives. So, you know the story, God gave them the Ten Commandments to guide them. And one of those commandments is found in Exodus chapter 20. Verses 8 through 11, it says this: "Remember to observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. You have 6 days each week for your ordinary work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath day of rest dedicated to the Lord your God. On that day, no one in your household may do any work. This includes you, your sons and daughters, your male and female servants, your livestock, and any foreigners living among you. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and everything in them, but on the seventh day he rested. That is why the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and set it apart as holy." Remember, there is a day that is blessed and holy. Remember it. Remember that life is a gift. Remember to take time to delight in it out of grateful worship. Remember to be present to the moment in all of its joy. Why did God tell you to remember? Because you and I, we forget. We forget God's blessing. We forget what God's done in our lives. The seventh day is a Sabbath day of rest dedicated to the Lord. It's not just about rest, but it's also about worship. It's not necessarily just about singing at church. That's a good thing, but it's fully engaging with God. Again, worship is more than just what happens on Sundays. Can I encourage you to expand worship to be anything that will highlight God's goodness in your own life? Having coffee with a friend that you haven't seen in a while, that can be worship as you reconnect. Friends are hard to come by. It's taking a walk in a forest preserve, seeing God's nature. That's an act of worship as you marvel at His creativity and beauty. Expand worship to, don't limit worship to just what happens in this room. There's so much more out there. And it sounds kind of odd, but God even commanded that you take a Sabbath. He's commanding you to rest, to delight in Him. It sounds like He's commanding you to eat ice cream. Like, duh, yeah. Which we're going to have after the service, all right? But hurry, hurry is the human condition. Hurrying your way through life as fast as you can. Like when I was younger, I couldn't wait to grow older. Now that I'm older, I wanted to slow down, right? Because I wasn't in the moment. I just was looking ahead. This command is the only commandment with a why behind it. And it's the longest commandment of the ten. God retells the creation story and why He rested. God lovingly commands all of us to remember, to rest, and to worship. That's God's heart. It's a gift. He wants you to rest. Third thought this morning is this: Sabbath as resisting. Sabbath as resisting. Again, the setting is Israel is on the edge of the Jordan River, and they can almost see Canaan, the promised land. It's a stone's throw away, and they're ready to cross over into what God has given them. And they've been wandering in the desert for 40 years since Mount Sinai, since the last thing I just read. 40 years. And Moses gathers them, and he gives them the Ten Commandments 2.0. Listen to what it says in Deuteronomy chapter 5, verses 12 through 14. Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. You have 6 days each week for your ordinary work, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath day of rest dedicated to the Lord your God. Pastor Spence, you just read that. You just read that. What? But did you notice something different about this one? Instead of remember, Moses says to observe. Not just remember, but observe the Sabbath. Just like you observe Christmas and Easter. You plan for those holidays. You plan for the gatherings. You plan for the setup. You plan for the meal. You plan for who's coming. You anticipate what's going to happen with family gathering around. That's the same principle, right? You plan for the Sabbath in advance to make it special. Approach it with anticipation. You are to remember and observe the Sabbath. Well, Moses goes on to read the rest of the commandment in Deuteronomy 5:15. Remember that you were once slaves in Egypt, but the Lord your God brought you out with His strong hand and powerful arm. That is why the Lord your God has commanded you to rest on the Sabbath day. So this is a little different than the original command that we saw in Exodus. Now, notice this. In Exodus, the Sabbath was grounded in the creation story, where God built this rhythm into the world, right, to tap into this rest. That's the reason to Sabbath. But in Deuteronomy, the Sabbath is grounded in the Exodus story. You see the difference? This new generation that was about to go into Canaan, guess what? For 40 years, they've been wandering in the desert. They weren't slaves in Egypt like their parents and their grandparents and their great-grandparents were. Their parents and grandparents were slaves in Egypt, and they didn't get Sabbath at all. They didn't even get a day off. They worked all day, every day, until they died. That was their existence. But this new generation that was wandering in the desert with their parents and grandparents, right, was told to observe the Sabbath. Observing the Sabbath is resisting hurry. It's resisting busy. It's resisting more. Sabbath is a way of saying, I have enough. I'm going to stop. I'm going to slow down. Life back in the day when hardly anything was open on a Sunday, right? We remember those times and restaurants and nothing was open. Maybe we need to go back to that setting where we resist the urge to fill the day up with go, go, go. Instead, we fill up the day with rest and worship and time with God, time with others over a delicious meal, time in solitude reflecting on God's goodness in our own hearts. So as we wind down this series, Relationship with Hurry, again, hurry is the enemy of our soul. It's the enemy of our spiritual life. And like you, we've all bought into the lie that we have to go, go, go. Consume, consume, consume. Get, get. Do, do, do. We must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from our lives. The solution to an overbusy life isn't carving out 10 extra hours in a day to do what you want to do, because you're going to be exhausted anyway. How we spend our time is how we spend our lives. It's who we become or don't become. Even Jesus, the Son of God, needed time in the quiet place. Let's be like Him, right? His way of silence and solitude and simplicity and slowing. And this final way of Jesus was Sabbath. Sabbath. Sabbath is blessed and it's holy and it fills our souls back up with life. Sabbath as remembering what God brought us out of. That Sabbath is a gift from God to our souls. Sabbath is about resisting the urge of hurry and busy for one more day. My Sabbath happens to be Thursdays. Sundays is a work day. But Sabbaths and days off are not the same thing. Right? On Thursdays, I'm trying to practice this Sabbath. I've been trying to do it for a little while. I'm trying to rest and to worship. I'm trying to slow down, to stop, to delight in God, to tend to my soul. This past Thursday, I'm more of a book reader. I just love to crack open a book. I don't like to read it on a tablet. I just need it in my hands. But this day I thought, well, I'll just try listening to a podcast. Fell asleep. Out. I was trying to nurture my soul. But you know what? It's okay. I was tired. I rested. God doesn't say, well, come on. You fell asleep? I wanted you to hear that. But Thursdays, it's not about running errands or trying to get a to-do list done, but to rest, to spend time with God in prayer and His Word. To read, to worship, to spend time with Jules, the family. To remember where He brought me from and to resist going back to that Egypt type of mentality of hurry and busyness, and it crowds out life for my soul. Again, this is in a spirit of not legalism, where if you're not doing it, right? That's not what the Bible is saying. It's a practice. It's being aware of your own soul, your own heart. I want to encourage you, don't give up on these practices. Taking a Sabbath can be difficult for us because it's hard to stop, isn't it? Sometimes it's hard to slow down. It's intentionally saying no to a list of good things so we can say yes to the best things. You see, the definitive answer to our relationship with hurry this morning is found in the very words of Jesus in Matthew chapter 11, verses 28 and 30. These are the words of Jesus to his hearers back then, but he's also saying it to you this morning. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Not the church, not the restaurant, not friends. I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart. And you will find rest for your soul. It doesn't say you might. It doesn't say it's iffy. You will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. These are the words of Jesus to you, to us, the church. The question I have is, do you want to experience the life of Jesus? Will you decide to become an apprentice of Jesus and learn from him? Let's pray.